May it please the court. I have raised five issues in this appeal. I plan on spending the bulk or all of the time on point one because I believe it is dispositive in this court. In point one, I have asserted that the motion court failed to rule on two of the issues included in the amended motion. There are two main issues with regard to point one. First, whether Rule 7807C applies to motions filed under Rule 2915. And second, whether there is a final judgment in this case pursuant to Rule 7401B.
Can you include in that conversation an explanation as to why Rule 7301 doesn't take care of that, which provides that all the facts not specifically found are found in accordance with the judgment?
I will do my best to incorporate that, yes. And I'd like to begin by discussing Moore v. State. Moore has quickly become a seminal case on the issue of abandonment. And I don't want to confuse this court or opposing counsel. The present case has nothing to do with abandonment. The amended motion was timely filed. The original motion was timely filed. But I think Moore is relevant here because of the remedy in Moore. And this may address Rule 7301 as well, that the remedy in Moore was to remand back, and the dissent pointed out in Moore that the amended motion had been denied and that the pro se claims were attached to the amended motion and that even though they weren't specifically ruled on, the whole thing was denied. But this court issued footnote 3 in Moore. And footnote 3, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the first sentence says, the dissenting opinion advocates that this court should deny Mr. Moore's post-conviction claims rather than remand because all claims made in his pro se motion were incorporated into the amended motion. Now, this court later said in that same footnote, the motion court did not reference these claims or adjudicate them with written findings of fact and conclusions of law as required by Rule 2915J. And then the final line of footnote 3 is Mr. Moore has not received the process that justice requires.
If there clearly was no discussion or reference to 7807,
that is true.
So the statements in Moore were not relying on a finding that it did not apply.
That is certainly true. And I think the state in this case would say this court just failed to consider that argument. I would say the last line of footnote 3, Mr. Moore has not received the process that justice requires, is an interpretation of Rule 2915J.
What about the fact, though, that Johnson versus State specifically says that the rule applies, that you have to request findings and not made?
Well, so two things about that. Johnson v. State, I don't think is quite so clear. I think Johnson v. State is essentially adopting what the appellate in that court was arguing. Johnson v. State says the Rule 2915 requires the court shall issue findings of fact and conclusions of law on all issues presented. Rule 7807C provides, in all cases, allegations of error relating to the former language of the judgment, including the failure to make statutorily required findings, must be raised in a motion to amend the judgment in order to be preserved for appellate review. It's the next part that's important. Movement recognizes that he did not comply with Rule 7807C, and this point is not preserved for appeal. Movement seeks plain error review, and then this court ends and goes on to the next subject. So I don't know that this court adopted the view here that 7807C applies.
Well, there'd have been no need to do plain error review if it didn't apply and require it. Right?
But then
it got regular review.
But then this court never actually, in the case, analyzes that under plain error review. That's the last line.
Because plain error doesn't apply to 20 post-conviction motion.
And that's true. This court doesn't say that in Johnson.
And is the court required to say everything the court has previously held in every opinion?
Well, no. But, all right, here's another thing about Johnson. So I pointed out in my reply brief a case called Berry v. State from this court in 1993. In Berry v. State, it held that remand is necessary when the motion court fails to issue findings of fact and conclusions of law on all issues presented. This court stated a similar, it wasn't necessarily necessary to the holding, but in Tooley v. State, this court said the same thing. Those cases have never been overruled by this court.
Could I redirect you?
Yes,
Your Honor. Is Rule 7807C a red herring in this case, that it has no application to this case? Because we're not looking, the Court of Appeals ruled, and we're not looking at whether or not the trial court complied with the requirement of findings of fact and conclusions of law. We're looking at whether it entered a judgment that adjudicated all the claims.
Yes, Your Honor, I wrote the letter brief on Monday where I said I would talk about Rule 7401B, and I agree that the language of Rule 7401B actually suggests this is not a final judgment.
And the analogy would be that the cases that we had originally with Rule 7807C dealt with juvenile cases where there are claims that termination of parental rights should be made for abandonment. I'm trying to think of some of the other grounds, failure to rectify, et cetera. Mm-hmm. On each of those claims, the statute requires there to be findings of fact and conclusions of law. And when a court found there was abandonment or was not abandonment, there was failure to rectify or was not, Rule 7807 applies if it failed to make the required statutory findings. It would not have any application if the court failed to adjudicate a claim of abandonment or failure to rectify. That is a claim that has not been adjudicated. There is no final judgment.
I believe that's accurate. In this case, and now of course 7401B states that the court can certify a judgment as a final judgment, even without ruling on all issues. Of course, there is no certification here.
Only if it adjudicates all the claims between parties that are not interrelated mm-hmm. to the remaining claims.
And here, there were multiple claims raised in the amended motion. Not all of the claims have been adjudicated.
So even if this court, you're arguing, even if this court were to find that 7807 applies, it applies to the failure to make findings and conclusions, not to the failure to address claims as a whole.
I would agree with that.
As I understand that your argument really boils down to findings. The claim is ineffective assistance, and you're saying there weren't findings.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So why doesn't the usual rule in civil cases apply that all facts are determined to be found in accordance with the judgment?
Well, I think Rule 2915J, which requires findings on all issues, I think that might trumpet here.
Usually the usual rules of civil rules apply to these cases unless we say they don't.
And
I'm trying
true.
To figure out why it doesn't make sense that when you look at all these rules together,
well,
in other words, 29 tells post-conviction motion courts to find facts on everything that's pled.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay.
And then it's assumed that all facts are found unless you tell me I didn't otherwise. And then you go to 7807, which says if I was supposed to find a fact I didn't, you're supposed to tell me. Why isn't that the better route for this court to go? Apply the usual rules that we apply in all cases, because it's not just public defenders who always handle these types of cases, right?
Yes, Your Honor. That's true.
What are the two? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I forget what I was going to say. Go ahead.
No, and why isn't that the better route?
Well,
I'm sorry.
So I don't have 7301 in front of me, but 7807, I can say, speaks to trials, and this is not a trial. This is a motion. This is a hearing. Sometimes there's not even a hearing, and there's nothing about 7807 that actually applies to non-trials. Every single title in all of Rule 78 applies to trials, so that's one reason why it wouldn't apply. I don't know about the language of 7301.
How many claims did he make of ineffective assistance of counsel?
He made numerous claims.
And could the motion court refuse to consider those claims?
Only if, no, the answer is no, but on appeal, so before Gerlt was the first case to apply 7807C to post-conviction motions by the Western District in 2011. Before that case, there were a list of factors as to whether it needed to be remanded.
But the issue is not that they're all called ineffective assistance of counsel claims. The issue is he claimed multiple instances when his counsel was ineffective.
Yes.
And those multiple instances, he has a right to adjudication of those claims.
Yes, Your Honor. And I would argue that this was the court's holding in Moore v. State, that the defendant there or the movement there did not receive the process that justice required. Now, if Moore did not receive the process that justice required, I fail to see how my client, Mr. Green, received the process that justice required.
As I recall, all of the issues that you complain about that weren't reviewed were in the pro se motion.
They were in the pro se motion that was attached to the amended motion.
If this court would adhere to the rule, there's some cases that went back about can't incorporate. That doesn't include attachment. If this court would go back to a rule that didn't even consider those things attached, would that prohibit this type of problem from happening?
Well, the first, I would say that should be done only prospectively.
That would make sense.
Second, I would say that my interpretation of the rule is you can't refer back to the pro se motion. But there's nothing in the rule that actually says you can't attach it. So I think there's a difference between attaching it and referring back to the motion. You can't incorporate by reference, but that wasn't done here. He actually physically attached it. So I think that's what the difference is. But I agree with you, if this court held that, then that would alleviate this issue. Thank you.
May it please the court. Rule 7807C applies to post-conviction proceedings. The rule in subsection A, the rule applies, provides that in jury-tried cases, except as otherwise provided, these through allegations of error must be included in motion for new trial to be preserved for appellate review. So subsection A specifically refers to jury trials. Subsection B talks about in cases tried without a jury. And in subsection C, the rule specifically states that in all cases, allegations relating to the form and or language of the judgment, including the failure to make statutorily required findings, must be raised in a motion to amend the judgment in order to be preserved for appellate review. So this is not a provision that applies only for jury tried cases. It also applies for cases that are not tried by jury and post-conviction proceedings, civil in their nature. And the courts have, since this rule was adopted and it came into effect in 2005, the courts have repeatedly applied it to post-conviction proceedings. And the purpose of this rule is simply to eliminate needless remand, because appellant here was aware that the findings of facts did not specifically address all the issues when the findings were first enacted, and he could have brought this to the court's attention, and the court could have remedied it instead of waiting until he appeals to bring this claim.
How did the motion court rule on Mr. Green's claim that the prosecution failed to release discovery of preliminary hearing tape?
Yes, I believe so. That was
How did the trial court rule?
I think the trial court found that there was that he failed to establish that there was a prosecutorial misconduct. The court discussed the fact that this claim had been brought before the trial court, and then also the evidence that post-conviction proceedings did not establish that.
Which are the two claims that the trial court didn't rule on?
The two claims that an issue here, claim 8C2 and 8C3. 8C2 is a claim that purports to be a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel for failing to request this speedy trial. And
do we know how the motion court ruled on that?
These are the two claims that there were no specific findings. So
right, no, I'm not asking about findings. Did the trial court sustain or deny those claims?
The motion court denied the amended motion that contained those claims. So by denying the motion, the court denied all claims in it.
There are cases where at the conclusion of the judgment, the trial court says, I deny all other claims. Did that occur in this case?
In this case, after the evidentiary hearing, there was a discussion about proposed findings, and the court did not issue its findings until a later day. So there was no ruling on the record at the motion court's hearing.
Or on paper, did the court ever say in its order or judgment, I deny all other claims, not specifically addressed?
The court said, now it is therefore ordered, adjudicated, and decreed that having considered Movement's amended motion to vacate, set aside, or correct the judgment or sentence, the discord finds that Movement's motion shall be overruled as to the charge in case number 0831, which is the underlying case.
So do we know if the court considered the matters attached in the pro se motion?
By denying the motion, yes.
How do we know that, especially when he just referred to the amended motion and not the pro se motion?
Well, the amended motion was the only motion before the court.
But it didn't incorporate the pro se. It was attached.
Right.
But it's not incorporated.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry. The time the amended motion superseded the pro se motion, the attached claims were part of the amended motion. Okay. They were incorporated in it. They were not separate motion because only one is before the motion court. Rule 7104 does not apply to post-conviction proceedings because Rule 2915 has specific provisions about findings of facts in the finality of the motion court's finding. In 2915K provides that an order sustaining or overruling a motion filed under the provisions of this Rule 2915 shall be deemed a final judgment for purposes of appeal by the movement or by the state. And also there is a provision in Rule 2915J which requires the court to issue findings of facts and conclusions of law on all issues. To the extent that this rule contradicts Rule 7104, Rule 2915 governs in this case. Thank you. If the court has no further questions, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Buffalo, your opponent has read what the court has ruled. How do we know one way or the other whether or not there was an adjudication
Well, I think you need to look at the sentence right before where she started reading. And it says, for these reasons, Movens' claims for post-conviction relief must be denied.
I think you ought to read that again.
So, for these reasons, Movens' claim for post-conviction
claim.
Relief.
Singular. Claim.
Movens' claim. Well, but... So it does say claim. I think it means claims. I think that's also a mistake, but I'm not...
Can I add in the things I think should have been in it?
Well, there's also the typo in... So for these reasons, I think that would clearly be a typo.
Why isn't it one motion, one claim, multiple grounds, multiple arguments?
Well, I think there are multiple claims. Each one is a separate claim, is I believe how it has been interpreted. But I don't have anything.
Is there anything in Rule 29.15 that talks about submitting multiple claims and judgments on multiple claims?
Well, including claims of ineffective assistance of counsel is 29.15A.
Mm-hmm.
So that would appear to be multiple claims.
But there's only one judgment, and that's granting or denying the motion.
And, but I would say there are multiple claims, and I think 29.15J would support that. By the court shall issue findings of fact and conclusions of law on all issues presented. So the question is...
That's why I'm back to 7301. Let me just read you the language of it. It says, all fact issues upon which no specific findings are made shall be considered as having been found in accordance with the result reached.
And
so the result reached was that the court denied the amended motion.
And
so while that's not dispositive, while you get review of that based upon all the evidence presented, what I don't understand is how that rule can be read to do anything other than think that the trial court denied the amended motion, which... Mm-hmm. You decided to attach instead of set out in specific paragraphs in your amended motion.
And that's true, but evidence was presented, so it's not like they were hiding this issue.
I agree. I absolutely agree, and that's why I don't understand why the presumption is that the trial court didn't consider those claims.
Well,
because they were attached, he made a bunch of specific findings, and the usual rule is that all findings, and the catch-all for lawyers... You know, if they think they were weren't considered on particular claims, is we've got a rule 7807 that allows you to point that out to the trial court.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't your position encourage sandbagging? Actually, whether it's attaching a motion or some other way, if you see there's not a fact in there, you don't point it out to the trial court and you just appeal.
Well,
to get a redo.
Well, I certainly don't. Well, I certainly don't think it's the most efficient way to do things, and I think the most efficient way to do things would have been to do a motion to modify, but I don't think any attorney wants to say I want to go to the appellate court and ask for a remand. I think it was overlooked by the attorney handling this in the motion court. And so certainly not efficient, but I don't think a ruling here in Mr. Green's favor would encourage other attorneys to, because it wouldn't, I'm not asking for anything that the motion court couldn't have done on its own.
Let me ask it this way. Did the motion court exclude any evidence that was offered regarding these claims that were attached?
No, Your Honor.
So why isn't it fair to assume the court considered that evidence when it denied the amended motion?
Well, because the motion court said right above the conclusion, for these reasons the claim shall be denied, and the motion court listed the reasons, and these two claims were not included in those reasons. So I don't think this court can assume that the motion court did consider them. And as for 29.15K, I'm sorry, my time is up. If I can have 5 seconds, I'd say it should be read in accordance with J, that J requires issues of findings of fact and conclusions of law. I don't think when this court promulgated the rules, they meant for 29.15K to not be read with 29.15J. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.